Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook at www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia. That's where you'll find more than 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player, including some possibly read by today's guest. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia. Okay, so where was I before the commercial? All right, Mr. Media is recorded live from the new media capital of the world and one-time home of a Tampa Bay Buccaneers color announcer by the name of, wait, it'll come to me. Anyway, good old what's-his-name was here, too, Tampa Bay, Florida.
Again, I've heard things that'll blow your mind. I've been on the inside, and now I'm ready to talk.
Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. All new every Wednesday at 10. Only on True TV. Not reality, actuality.
Jesse Ventura came to national prominence as a boxer nicknamed... I'm sorry, it's a wrestler. Why did I say boxer? As a wrestler nicknamed The Body. He took a turn on the silver screen in Predators with Arnold and even went by Governor for a term. Now he's bidding for you and me to start thinking about him as the brain. Okay, don't get me wrong. Ventura hasn't asked anyone to call him that. Not yet. But reading his new book, American Conspiracies, it's clear he's given considerable thought to the real stories behind some of this country's most nagging, unsolved mysteries. Now, whether you believe what he believes or think he's nuts, a reader of American Conspiracies can't deny Ventura has thought out his positions on everything from the Kennedy assassinations and 9/11 to the world financial collapse we're just starting to come out from under. Now, I should mention this is ground also covered in his new TV show, True TV's Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura, which you can watch every Wednesday at 10 p.m. Now, not that Ventura is all drama and no fun these days. Anyone who's caught him on the radio with Howard Stern knows he's just as comfortable talking smack with Hulk Hogan, and telling wild stories about his days as a Navy SEAL as he is discussing conspiracies. Jesse, Governor, welcome to Mr. Media. All right, try here. Governor?
Yes, Bob.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I'm always interested in that moment of lost innocence, and I don't mean sexually. When did you first suspect that your government was lying to you about something, anything?
Well, actually, when I first suspected it was when I was in high school. And I was being taught that we were in Vietnam to stop the domino effect of communism. Mm-hmm. And I came home from school, and my mother and father are both World War II veterans. My brother's a Vietnam veteran, as am I. And my father, I started relating what they were teaching me about Vietnam. This was in the early 60s, of what they were teaching us about Vietnam. And my father told me unequivocally, it's all a bunch of BS. He said, this war isn't about stopping communism. It's about people are making big money. And I didn't believe my father, and we fought over it. And then, of course, I in turn went to Vietnam, and I was fortunate enough then to come home, and my dad was still alive then, and I got to look him in the eye and say, you know, Dad, you were right, and I was wrong.
That's an interesting generational thing, where mostly it was fathers then believing in the war and sons not believing.
Well, you know, my dad, he had 6 bronze battle stars in World War II. He fought at North Africa, Normandy, the Remagen Bridge, Battle of the Bulge, Anzio, and Berlin. And I didn't believe him at the time, but I think he had a pretty good base of experience to know, you know, about what war is like and all that. And he just never bought into Vietnam at all, not one bit.
It must have made you stand out among your friends and neighbors. Not that you haven't since then, but to be on with your dad, be on opposite sides of something like that.
Well, it was a private thing. I didn't carry it outside. These were conversations that took place at the dinner table.
Mm. And when did your disbelief in what your government was saying expand from Vietnam over the years?
Well, when I got out of the service. In 1973, when I went off active duty, I was going on the GI Bill. I went to about a half a year of junior college before I actually embarked on my pro wrestling career. When I was at junior college, one night Mark Lane came in, who, of course, was one of the first. He wrote Plausible Denial and a few other books dealing with Kennedy. And he came in to speak, and it was the first time that I ever heard someone denounce the Warren Commission as being fabrication and not true. You know, so that kind of piqued me a little bit. But then, of course, I embarked on my pro wrestling career, and then in 1985, pro wrestling changed. It went from being territories where you moved parts of the country and drove. That's when Vince McMahon took it national, and all of a sudden, instead of driving to places, we're flying everywhere and sitting in airports. Well, anyone that's ever done that consistently knows it gets pretty boring, you know, sitting around in airplanes and riding on planes. So I recalled back to Mark Lane and that, and I started buying every book I could on the Kennedy assassination, and I found it so intriguing because this stuff is better than anything Tom Clancy or Vince Flynn could ever write, and it's backed up a lot of it by documentation that it very well could be. I don't buy for a moment Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone.
Mm-hmm. I got that from reading the chapter, yeah. Here's the question I have for you, and I think I know the answer, but there have been so many people who've written so many books about the Kennedy, and we're talking about JFK, the Kennedy assassination, questioning, you know, very specific details. Why is it so hard to get the government to act on a commission or just reveal all the stuff that's supposedly hidden? Is it just, you know, is somebody thinks they're looking out for us, or is they have that much to hide?
I think it's they have something to hide because the government, whenever they do something illegal or something borderline illegal or they're involved in anything, what do? They put it under national security, and then none of us can see the documents for 50 years or whatever it is. The term national security is being totally, totally abused. Now, there are national security issues, certainly, and there's things that probably the government should keep from us for a certain length of time. But I'll give you an example. Do you know today that you still cannot get, because of national security, Lee Harvey Oswald's tax return? Now, someone may say, well, why is that important? Well, I'll tell you why it's important. Because on his tax return, it would tell where he got his income. And wouldn't it be interesting if you could follow the paper trail of his income if it led to the government? Why else would they not release it?
Maybe he was shy.
Who, Oswald? He's dead.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, you know, what would be an alternative reason as to why you still can't get Oswald's tax return today? I mean, he's been dead for, you know, since 1963.
Oh, I'm with you on this. I mean, all that stuff, it's very hard to imagine a good reason except that somebody's covering something. But even now, I mean, you know, you think it's 47 years later, whatever it is. Why is it still covered up? Surely everyone around then at the time who, if the government in some way was involved, they must be pretty much dead. What are they still covering up, and why? I mean,
I'll tell you, it's simple. It really is simple. If it came out today that the whole Kennedy assassination was a fraud and that Oswald was involved and there was conspiracy, wouldn't that literally blow them out of the water on all these other things that they've told us they know nothing about? I mean, if they can kill whoever killed the president and got away with it, well, that sets the table. If you can murder the president and get away with it, you can pretty much do anything you want, don't you think?
So you think that's it?
Absolutely, that's it. I mean, if it came out today, well, let's say hypothetically it came out today and they found out Oswald really had nothing to do with it. Well, what would that do to everything else from the mainstream media to the government itself? Wouldn't that literally destroy both credibility?
Would it? But at this point, would it?
Well, you know, I get attacked for simply asking questions. I mean, I've gone to where you're not allowed to go. 9/11. How come today you are called unpatriotic, you're called crazy, and all these other things when you simply ask questions about 9/11 and would like to get answers? I mean, when I was going through Navy SEAL training, in my second phase, which was demolition and land warfare, I had a chief warrant officer, and I was 19 then, who impressed to me very strongly, there is no dumb question. And, you know, that applies greatly when you work with demolition. There is no dumb question, because if you don't know it, it's not dumb. And you could run the risk not only of killing yourself, but you could do something even more tragic, and that is kill one of your teammates with you. And so I've lived my life by that standard. There is no dumb question. If I don't understand it, it's certainly not dumb to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up the 9/11, because, you know, in reading through the book, you know, I felt like, okay, you know, I've read a lot of stuff on the Kennedy assassinations and Martin Luther King, and I know we only have so much time with you today. So I turned my attention to 9/11. I mean, for a long time, obviously, we were told it was by the Bush administration, it was un-American to question anything about the government on events of that day. But now it does seem more common to doubt almost everything that we were told that day and in the days since.
Yeah, I mean, and why were we told that? Look at what went down. Okay, 9/11 happened. There was no investigation. And, you know, here's a funny thing. They call me a conspiracy theorist now. Well, the government is also. What have they put on the table to prove that bin Laden did it? And I'll fire this at you. How can you convict someone before indicting them? The government has never officially come forward with any evidence. And now they got this Khalid Sheikh Mohammed that they claim confessed to it. Excuse me, they waterboarded him 180 times, and I can speak from experience because I have been waterboarded. And it is torture. I made the top 10 list last year at Yale University. Apparently they do this every year and have done it for a number of years, the top 10 quotes of the year. And I made it on when I told Larry King. I said, Larry, you give me Dick Cheney a waterboard in 1 hour and I'll have him confess to the Sharon Tate murders. And that's the truth. When, if you're being tortured, you will say whatever it is to stop the torture. Mm-hmm. So when they say Khalid Sheikh Mohammed confessed, after 180 waterboardings, anyone on this planet would probably confess.
Do you think, I mean, is Cheney somehow at the top of the list of people who we should be suspicious of conspiring against the United States on these things?
Well,
he's certainly still out front saying, don't. It's un-American to look into this. It's un-American to fight this. He's not even in office anymore.
Well, exactly. Okay, yes, he has a lot of questions, in my opinion, to answer for, and many of them on the record. At the 9/11 Commission, Mineta, the head of their transportation, testified, now Bush is in Florida, testified they were down in the bunker, and this is all documented, when a young person came up and said to Mr. Cheney, the plane is 30 minutes out. He came up again and said, it's 20 minutes out. He came up a third time and said, it's 10 minutes out. Mr. Vice President, do the orders still stand? And Cheney snapped around and said, of course they stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary? Well, what were they talking about there? What was the and of course, then you got the 9/11 Commission that had the President and Vice President testify together in a closed room. So none of us know what was said or anything. Now, since when can you go testify with someone else? What, so you both make sure you got the same story?
Oh, they probably go to the men's room together, too, you know.
Well, you know, it, say what you want, but there's a lot of unanswered questions about 9/11. Well, here's a good one for you. The mainstream media wouldn't even cover this. About 10 days ago in San Francisco, 1,000 architects and engineers signed a petition demanding for a new investigation. Now, I tried to, and I'll show you censorship. Arianna Huffington, for 2 years, has been after me to write for the Huffington Post. So I did. I did it one thing, and then I came in on 9/11 talking about this, that these architects met demanding a new investigation, over 1,000 of them. And it went up for an hour, and they pulled it down, and they said, we don't do conspiracies. Well, they let Oliver Stone write a thing last summer on JFK, and they let Jenny McCarthy write a thing on the conspiracy to inoculations and all that stuff that they're giving kids. So even the Huffington Post practices censorship when it comes to 9/11.
Okay, but Governor, isn't it about credibility? I mean, you know, she was on the cover of Playboy. She was naked. You were just governor of Minnesota. Come on.
What do you mean she was on the Playboy naked?
You know, her name just went right by me. The woman who – the autism.
Jenny McCarthy or whatever?
Jenny McCarthy, yeah.
Well, what is being naked? Excuse – why? Because you pose nude? How does that hurt your credibility? Explain to me how your credibility should be hurt because of that.
No, I'm
you know what that's like saying? That's like saying this, the typical thing. All prostitutes have bad eyesight because it just happens that they're prostitutes, so therefore their eyesight clearly must be bad because they can't understand what they see or they can't distinguish what they see.
Let me ask you this. What do you find that people are more willing to accept in your conspiracy theory about 9/11? And what are they least willing to accept?
Well, what they totally will not accept is the fact that our government may have played a role in it, and if they didn't play a role in it, that they certainly allowed it to happen. And there is a lot of evidence that indicate those things. Remember in this book, I'm not making this stuff up. This is not, I'm not Tom Clancy, I'm not Vince Flynn trying to create a great espionage novel. And then I also heard about I'm being nailed by somebody saying I'm just a profiteer trying to make money off this. I'll tell you what, when they initially came to me with this book, I turned it down. I didn't want to write it. Then I waited about 2 weeks thinking about it and thought, no, I have to write this book because 100 years from now, I don't want people to believe that everything we swallowed hook, line, and sinker and that there wasn't dissension about any of these 14 conspiracies. So I took the side of this conspiracy. We did research. We brought out all the facts. And ultimately, it's up to you, the reader, to decide if there's enough facts there to warrant something.
Obviously, you've been taking some heat in the last week, particularly about conspiracy mongering. You've been talking about
not that. Really.
What I want to ask you though is where's the line in expressing concern about these things and then creating panic, or is there a line?
Well, there's nothing about creating panic. I don't understand that. What panic? It's called learning the truth, and if the truth causes panic, we're in big trouble.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the day that we can't know the truth, you know, like the Bible says, the truth will set you free. So why is there panic to learn the truth?
Well, some people, again, and it comes down to, you know, after 9/11, how people were so hesitant to criticize the government.
Because you were told you were un-American and unpatriotic.
Right, right.
How hard was that pounded into our heads? Don't you dare question anything. You're unpatriotic if you do that.
But people believe that. Sometimes they believe that without even being told, and it goes back before 9/11. Well, they want so much to believe whatever the government says is true. And do you? What I want to ask you is, your politics is, last I recall, we're independent. Do you find one group or the other is more willing to follow the government line on things, or are they willing to follow the government line according to their politics?
No, I think both of them follow the government line. The classic example is torture. Okay, President Obama comes in and says, oh, we're not going to investigate all this torture that went on. It's time for us to move forward. Well, the minute I hear government saying they're not to question something and time to move forward, well, that means both of them are guilty. Now, the Democrats did not do the torturing, but what the Democrats are guilty of is they knew it was going on and they did nothing to stop it nor to bring it to light. You know, and that's like you. If you know a crime is going to be committed, you're guilty if you don't come forward to speak out or show or, you know, warn people.
Of all the conspiracy theories in the book, and, you know, it's a fascinating book. It's well written. It's really interesting to read. But of all of them, is 9/11 at the top of the list of those that infuriates you the most, or is there another one?
No, probably John Kennedy. Because I think in the modern day, that's what set the table for all the rest. If you can get away with killing the president, well, then you can get away with anything, wouldn't you think?
Sadly, yeah.
And what followed? All right, every assassination was a lone nut. You got to be kidding me. These guys never spoke to anyone, and a conspiracy means two people. A conspiracy doesn't mean it has to be 40 people. Two people is a conspiracy, and you're going to tell me all of these assassinations, it was always a destitute lone nut who was totally a failure in life, but yet when it came time to kill this prominent person, they were as good as the Navy SEALs. And I don't buy that. And I'll fire this one at you. What does the assassination of Martin Luther King, the assassination of Malcolm X, and I'll throw in a new one that isn't in the book, and I wish I would have included it, the assassination of John Lennon. What do those three have in common?
Okay, when you throw Lennon in there, I'm not sure. Go ahead, tell me.
All three of those individuals were under government surveillance at the time they were killed, and that's all documented.
Well,
now, shouldn't the government have been able to prevent it if they had them under or stand a chance of preventing it, if they were under that type of surveillance? Or was the surveillance like we would do in SEAL Team, where you watch your target, you learn about your target, and you look for the best window of opportunity to be successful on the op you're going to run on that target?
Hmm. I wanted to ask you, speaking of surveillance, in the introduction of the book, this surprised me as much as anything. You said that you found when you became governor of Minnesota that the CIA had someone on your staff, at least one someone.
Well, not on my staff. Not on my staff. They're a permanent government employee who is there before you get there, and they're there after you leave. And you know what's interesting? This is the second time I wrote about that. I likewise wrote about it in Don't Start the Revolution Without Me, and nobody responded to it. And so I thought, I better write this again. Because to me, and now, do I know that they're in all 50 states? No, I do not. But I can't assume Minnesota's an exception.
Well, I would, because I was going to say, if they're in Minnesota, then they're probably everywhere for the same reason. I mean, why?
And are you aware that the CIA's mission statement says they're not to be operational in the United States?
Well, of course, right. That was
there you go. Well, why are they embedded in state government then?
Has anyone challenged you on that from within the government and said, oh, that's not true?
No, they have not.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And I won't say who it is because I could go to jail for that, you know, like the Valerie Plame Wilson thing, you know, with Rove and Scooter Libby and all that, and Scooter Libby got convicted for it. See, I can state they're there, but I cannot tell you who it is. And only myself and the chief of staff were made aware of it.
Wow.
Nobody else.
I wanted to ask you, this is the second book that you've written with Dick Russell. And I wondered, just on the technical side of things, how does the collaboration work? I mean, do you say, Dick, I'd like to do a book about X, and he does the research and brings it
to you? Oh, no, not at all, not at all. In fact, Dick pushed me to do the book. He was on the side of the publishers. I at first didn't want to do it, and then I made the decision to do it. No, Dick is a phenomenal research guy, unbelievable. And so, and that is not my strong point. I don't have the time nor the patience to do that. So together I view it, we kind of make a whole. You know, we fill in each other's blanks. Like Dick Russell isn't going to carry the name recognition Jesse Ventura is. If Dick Russell writes a book, it's not going to get the publicity Jesse Ventura can bring to the book. And so, but Dick does, I give kudos to Dick. This book would not have been written without Dick Russell. I couldn't have did it.
And then I want to change gears on you slightly before we have to wrap.
Sure.
Governors have been more in the news these days, it seems, than ever before. Spitzer, Patterson, Sanford. What do you make of that? Did you get out before the golden age of being a governor?
I don't know. I think that it all comes back to something very basic, and that is in our country, we have an entire system that is based almost criminally when you come into it, and I'll explain. The election process in this country is based upon two concepts, panhandling and bribery. And when I say that, it's about how they raise the money. You have to either go out and panhandle to get it, you know, tell people, please give me money so I can go do this. And then if you return a favor, does it not then become bribery? And when you're in a corrupt system like that, most people, when they get elected, I believe, come in honestly. But the longer you stay in this system, the more corrupt you will get by accepting the system. And I can speak on this. My father said to me once when I was a young man, he made a blanket statement. He said he had only had an eighth grade education. He's a World War II vet. He said, you know, all politicians are crooks. And I was in high school then. I said, come on, Dad, you can't say that. You can't make a blank statement. They all can't be crooks. You know what his reasoning was? He said, oh, yeah, they are. He said, because they spend $1 million for a job that pays $100,000 a year. You would never do that in the private sector. You wouldn't spend more for the job than what it was going to pay you. And I can honestly say this to you. If my dad were alive today, I can say, Dad, your son's not a crook, because you know how much money I raised, and you don't hear the media talk about this about me or my campaign because they want me gone. They don't want people to be educated about what happened in Minnesota. Do you know how much money I raised to become the governor of Minnesota?
I don't know.
$300,000. And so I could say to my father, your son isn't, because I worked at that job. I made $120,000 a year. If you multiply that by four, it means I spent $300,000, but I made $480,000.
Yeah.
Who else? Who else out there could make that statement on an election of that magnitude?
Mm-hmm. Now, Governor, before we run out of time, are you
sure.
doing any book signings or appearances anywhere?
Yeah, I'm doing. Let's see, I got a sheet in front of me here. Hold on, I will be at Borders tonight at 7:30 in Torrance, California. 7:30 at the Borders in Torrance, California, and then tomorrow I will be at Barnes and Noble on 3rd and St. Promenade in Santa Monica.
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can find Governor Jesse Ventura's new book, American Conspiracies, in great bookstores everywhere, or some of the places he just mentioned, or you can order it online at MrMedia.com. And catch his show, Conspiracy Theory, with Jesse Ventura, every Wednesday at 10 p.m. on True TV. Governor, it's a fascinating book, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Let me add, too, a lot of people told me, they led me to believe there wouldn't be a lot of interest in this book. Well, as of it's already in 4 days, it sold more than Don't Start the Revolution Without Me, and in 4 days it already rose to number 4 on Amazon.
Wow.
So clearly there is readership out there, and I urge everyone, and I didn't do this book for the money. I really and truly did not, because like I said, I wasn't going to do it at all until I thought about it and felt it needed to be done.
Well, sir, you are welcome back here to talk about this or anything else anytime you like, and thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And, folks, for more interviews with your favorite political commentators, surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with reporters and historians from The Washington Post, including Philip Sheenon, who wrote The Commission, the editor of PolitiFact.com, and many more. And please take advantage of this great offer for Mr. Media radio listeners. Go to www.audiblepodcast.com/MRmedia to get a free audiobook download of your choice from more than 75,000 in stock when you sign up today. Again, that's www.audiblepodcast.com/MRmedia for your free audiobook. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/Andelman or facebook.com/Andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and spend it with Mist Media. Thanks for listening, everybody.